Welcome to Smart Cherry's Thoughts. This is Sai from India. Thank you very much, Johnny, for accepting my invitation and accepting to be on my show.
That's good, my man. That's good. I'm happy to be here.
So I've gone through a profile. I can see you're doing great work. So I thought to tell about your work to my audience.
Okay, well, I'm an investigative journalist. I've been working probably for about 7-8 years on some really good sites that look into crime, the history of the rich and famous and powerful, technology, both in the present, past and the future, and some of the biggest people and the movers and shakers of the world. That's what I investigate. Bad people all around.
Great. Thanks again, Johnny, for being on my show.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. I'm always interested to know what people want to ask me and want to find out, because yeah, that's always the interesting stuff for me.
So, investigative journalism and being a writer. So, what is this, and what made you to become this?
Okay, well, I had kind of a life crisis in about 2014, 2015. I'd always been working in hotels. I'd been a musician. I had been playing gigs around the place in a band called Bomb Alaska. I was trying to make something of it, but the world around was becoming technological. No longer were people playing in clubs. People were recording their music and putting it online. And then suddenly it's like, oh, well, you know, I want to have one foot in this world, this old world that I loved from the past. And I wanted to have one foot in the new world. And I realized that the majority of people just had all of their feet in the past. You know, the music scene started to die all around the place, and it became depressing for me. So I tried to retrain, look for different things to work in. But behind the scenes, I was already an investigator. I was already researching. I just did not know that one day I would write it down. And I didn't write it down because I was scared of writing it down. Because as soon as I wrote it down, I would know that, I care about it enough to put the words on paper or words on the screen, and to research and investigate it, that must mean I want to know more. And, you know, I had always, before I think 2015, I had always been scared of asking questions. I'd been scared of looking for answers, you know, in case my own answers were wrong and it undermined who I was as a person. But by 2015, I was so low. I was a drug addict. I was on morphine, codamols. I was on taking valiums here and there. I was I've always smoked a lot of weed. You know, I was down at lowest low. I wanted to end my life, really. And I kind of had this point where I said, okay, it's either death or glory, and I don't want to do death. So I'll just try and investigate the things that no one investigates. So we're getting me angry. I was thinking, why isn't anybody talking about this? You know, why isn't anybody interested in these things? And then I realized, well, there is people who are probably interested, because it's me. So I'm interested. That's a good start. Since then, it's been hard, because it was about 2016. I started writing properly. I started getting success straight away. When I say success, I mean like lots of people enjoyed my work, would say to me, wow, that's really good. By 2017, one of my articles was like the top story on vocal.media. And I was like, really, oh, wow, this is, you know, this is a really important thing in my life that I really enjoy doing. But I couldn't have, I mean, you don't get any money for doing it, really. Now there's ways for people to support your work. But then it was really hard to understand how to do that, how to, you know, and I felt guilty. You know, everybody feels guilty when they start out in their work. They feel that maybe their work isn't good enough and it's not worth people paying. And well, once they get better, then I'll ask people for help, you know. And I did a lot of that. I did a lot of, I won't ask people to start supporting my work until I proved myself as a person, as a writer, as an author, as an investigator. And that was always going to take a long time. And so what I did from the start is investigate very rich and powerful people. And straight away, I got censored. I got attacked. The article I wrote in 2017 about Theresa May's father, just before the election, went out to 250,000 people, in a week, and was not mentioned at all on any other news platform, any official platform. It was a dangerous story. It proved that the woman who was going for Prime Minister of the UK at that time, in the election in the UK, her father used to work with a serial killer who was responsible for the deaths of 130 plus people. This guy, Dr. John Bodkin Adams, used to get his patients to sign him into their will. So they'd say, oh, I'll give you all my house and all my money and all my belongings. And then he'd inject them with something and they'd die. And he'd take their money. He did that 130 times. And it's 40 might have killed 160. Well, when a prime minister's father worked with a serial killer, that's an interesting story. But straight away, I was censored. I was hidden. You know, I realized my articles weren't going to be allowed on the main platforms. They weren't allowed to discuss what I was finding. And that's really been my journey. From that point on, I got more sort of noticed in the independent media. Because I understand how to find stories, articles, intrigue that no one else can find in areas that no one else is looking. So I can research something for up to a year and no one else is going to get there first because no one has thought about it in the way I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to get in between. Really, it's trying to do what the mainstream media should do, but in an independent way, and trying to find interesting stories that explain our past, explain our present, and explain our future. So not just, and this is really important in my work, a lot of my work is going back in history a long time. Sometimes I go back 500 years and I go through someone's family history and I learn about every single member of the direct line of someone's family, every single thing they've done for the past 500 years. And I map it out to people and people say, wow, that's really interesting. There's so much similarity all of the way through. And what's really important is that while you watch one person go through time or one family go through time, and time changes around them, circumstances change, war happens, you know, people sail to America, people set up new lives, more war happens, political intrigues happen, drama, melodrama, silliness, wonder, war happens again, genocide, war, genocide, you know, you see, you don't only see someone's journey, the person's journey who I'm studying, but you see all of the history too that lead us to where we are. And a lot of it, people don't really know anymore. They just don't know history properly. They know little bits here and little bits there, but what has been put into an educational system so that you'll know this much. And there's a load of it that's being lost. A lot of information is just disappearing. So that's kind of what I do. I found some big things in my time as being an investigative journalist.
So you're writing articles. I can see you're doing a lot of writing things. So what is making you to do this? Because it's not easy for you to do what you're doing.
Yeah, well, what people don't realize about writing is that a lot of the time you don't get paid a lot of money even when you do manage to get it published. You know, it's stories appear, they get people go, wow, that's interesting information. And it's always there afterwards, but it disappears again, you know? You have to have people realize your long-term vision. And I'm discovering my own long-term vision of what I want to write about and where I want to go. So what I write about and what makes me want to write is my own line of questioning in life, you know, my own strand, my own thread, and how I see the world doesn't make any sense. So I think the best way is to say that like my life isn't made up of Johnny Vedmore born 1980 onwards. Yeah, my life is made up of a load of things from the past that I don't have any connection with people I've never had any connection with, but who have molded our world in such a way or helped to shape our world in such a way that it's pushed my life to be the life that I'm living now. And once I realized that none of us are really in control of where we're going. A lot of the time we're being manipulated and we're being pushed to do things by loads of suggestions all around us. And then once you do a bit of investigating and work out, there's a lot of people who make that happen. That doesn't happen by itself. You know, people push other people into directions, whether we think it's ethical or moral. That's what we do all the time, whether it be blatantly with marketing or advertising, or whether it be subtly with just, you know, suggestion in a headline in a newspaper. You know, we're always being pushed, nudged one way or the other, often psychologically. And I find that amazing, because it basically sets the scene for everything that happens. And if you can work it out, if you can work out what humans do in certain situations under certain pressure, you can work out the future. You can see, and humans, one of the most interesting thing about human beings is that we're trying. It's clear, whether you like it or not, it's clear that we're trying to become something transhuman. It's clear that there's an element of humans, not every human. I think 60-70% would say, oh, I don't want any of that, and then maybe 20 would go, maybe I'll have better vision so I can see it like a mile away perfectly, or and then 5% would be like, well, I don't mind having laser sight so I can shoot people with the, you know, and it goes on and on and on. Basically, the human beings, while still being human being, are trying to transition technologically, whether we like it or not. And I that is fascinating to me. And I've kind of been on the journey of trying to find out how that happened. And I didn't expect to go on that journey. I just expected to try and find people who were serial killers and people who were blackmailing and people who were sexual predators or whatever, you know, whatever type of person is out there who is nasty or horrible or devious or criminal. I wanted to find those people and look at what they were doing. But instead, I found like a lot of things about where we're heading in the future by looking at the past. And then I realized it's very clear that our future has been decided for us by people who lived 40, 50, 60, were in their prime 60 years ago, you know, in the 60s and the 50s. Those people have decided where we're going now. And in a sense, the people today are deciding where the people in 60 years are going, and so on and so forth, because we decide what we pursue, what technology we pursue, and technology changes everything. And so after World War II, you see this change in the paradigm of technology with the introduction of nuclear technology in general, and the nuclear bomb is a massive change in how people think about each other, how nation states interacted with each other. The Cold War began, and it wasn't until theories like mutually assured destruction came out in 1961 by Herman Kahn on thermonuclear war, or Kissinger's perpetual limited warfare that came out on foreign policy, nuclear war and foreign policy by Kissinger in about 1957. It wasn't until those sort of things came out that people realized those books and those works, that people realized that we were heading towards something where everybody was going to point the guns at each other, but not want to fire because the technology is so scary. And it changed the way the world worked. And once we understood that and it got implemented into policy, well, that was 1967 onwards. And from that point on, they've concentrated on what the future technologies are going to be, because they know the people who are in control of the big technologies to come in the future, the paradigm shifting technologies, the technologies that are like the atomic era was then. But now we've got about five or six of those different technologies coming in over the next couple of decades. And so it's no longer going to be just one big paradigm shift. It's just going to be constantly changing, evolving. And humans, it's clear. When I was young, I had an NES, Nintendo Entertainment System, and I loved it. Before that, I had a Commodore 16 Plus. And after the NES, I had an SNES. And after the SNES, I had an N64, and so on and so forth. And I kept going all the way. I couldn't stop myself, because every time a new technology came out, I stopped wanting to play the last thing, and I wanted to play the new thing. It's very human. I don't know if it's right. It'll probably be the death of us. It'll probably be the reason why we all kill each other. But it's what we want to do. We constantly want to upgrade. Yeah. And I'm extremely interested in that. And that the realization that our lives are going to change so rapidly in the next two decades, beyond belief, in a way that, you know, we don't understand. And it's being led by people who they want something much bigger than we understand. They want something much larger and much greater than we can, you know, manage to think in our head, because they know what the next game looks like. And the next game is scary. I mean, the introduction of everything from high-tech AI, still artificial narrow intelligence, but it's getting better and better. And we're entering into a period of fifth generation warfare where we won't know what's real or what's not anymore. And we are not ready for all of this. You know, it's interesting to see all the warnings in the past. People like Herman Kahn, who said, you know, if we don't think very carefully about how we use, I'm paraphrasing, but if we don't think very carefully about how we use technology, then we will not be on this earth much longer. You know, we have all of the potential to do the greatest things, but all of the potential to misinform, mismanage, misjudge, and destroy. You know, it's something that humans are programmed to do, because upgrade, go to the next games console. People forget the one thing is that it was always game over, game over, game over, game over. It's a selection in between of playing all of those games on that game console where you lose over and over and over again until you win finally at some point. You go, yay, I won, because it was so hard to win because I've lost so many times. Well, that's the same thing that we're doing currently. We look around, the world is at war, the world is at each other's throats, everybody hates each other, everybody's sad. And when people are sad, their behavior manifests in their own lives. So I see how the past, the present, and the future is heading towards somewhere where we will be so stressed as a human race that we will likely take it out on each other. And so that, all of that is why I write, because I find that interesting and I can't stop looking into it.
And what's your objective to do this?
Whew, well, I think just to give people an idea of what the world looks like, really, without being too scared. I spent a load of years reading and watching things that made me feel afraid. And whether they wanted to make you feel afraid or not, whether it was their intention, anybody who was writing a news article or a documentary, whether they wanted to make you feel afraid, it's irrelevant. They were making you feel afraid. They use fear. They use fear all of the time. Keep you nudged nudging you towards a direction, because strong emotion makes you commit to actions and make decisions in your life. And so to make the decisions they want, they have to nudge you in all sorts of ways. I want people to see how they're being nudged. I want people to understand that, you know, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to look around and say there's a load of people conspiring to make you do something, because that's happening. You know, it's happening. It's not a theory. There's loads of people. If you turn on the TV, as soon as you turn on CNN, there's a group of reporters on CNN. They're all sitting around the table and they all want you to think one way. They're all conspiring. The producers are conspiring. The cameraman's conspiring. They're in a big conspiracy to make you think a certain way. Everybody's doing it. You know, we're doing it. We want people to look at things through different filters. Some people do it for unethical reasons, and some people do it for ethical reasons. So I hope my goal is to do it for ethical reasons. But sometimes I get lost in the anger. I get lost in how sad it all is. I see Shani Luke, who's been confirmed dead in the back of a van in Gaza, and it makes me feel completely and utterly horrible. It makes me feel like I spent my whole life supporting the Palestinian struggle, for instance, with all my heart. Being from a Welsh socialist background, you know, I cared about that sort of stuff. Seeing something like that can shatter your whole, like, illusion of what you see as human and what you see as real, you know. And I think there's a whole load of things happening at the moment that are really driving me to say, I personally have got to stop indulging in the fear. Indulging in hate, indulging in anger. Even this week, I've had to decide to leave certain projects I'm doing and say I can't do them anymore because it just brings up too much hate, or it brings up too much anger, or I've got to do them in different ways. But I've got to do things that positively make people understand that they don't have to be scared about the next step. They have to have their eyes wide open. If they're scared, then they close their eyes. That's what we all do. We close our eyes when we're scared. You know, if we're going to be hit in the face, we do this. Oh my God, you're going to hit me in the face. That's exactly how we feel about everyday life. And the big stuff as well, what's going on in politics, but what's going on in the world. We got to keep our eyes open and not be led, nudged into fear, because the whole system has been created to make people scared, because it's the easiest way to make people comply with an idea. And so every single idea-based structure uses fear automatically as their tool, whether they want to or not, you know, whether they choose to or not. It's the go-to place, and I don't want to do that. So that's what my objective is to get people to see, look, all of this information is here. People are killing each other. People are doing this, all of this stuff, but do not fear. You could do something positive to change all of this, or if we look at it correctly, we can see how we're being lied to, what's happening. So we can teach our kids, we can teach our friends how to recognize things like logical fallacies, basic ways to see when an argument is false. Doesn't even necessarily mean that the overarching argument that is being made is false. It just means that the person arguing is using logical fallacies and must be discounted to some extent. You know, it's about the life is nuanced. It's not all extreme, I'm going to die. And it's not all extreme, oh, everything's wonderful all the time. It's always somewhere in between, and it drifts either way, and we don't know where it's going to go. And sometimes, and trust me, for the past 3 months of my life, I've had some of the worst times I've ever experienced in my life. You know, hit rock bottom, right at the rock bottom. But I already know that the nuance exists. I already know that's rock bottom, and I already know that it will come back up, and I will start floating again, because that's what we do. And all we got to do is work out that the end of the world is not here or here. When we don't live in these two places anyway, we live somewhere in the middle. And we live in a calm place. We live in a place where, in actual fact, if you go outside, your neighbors can be kind. Yeah, there's one or two of them who are angry and don't like your cats or whatever. But the rest of them are going to be kind. Yet you look on TV, that's not what you're shown. You look in the newspaper, that's not what you're shown. And there's a reason behind that. So that's my objective.
So in this process, investigating bad people who comes from different places and every bad person that you are studying, they will be occupied with multiple perspectives. Why they are becoming bad and what is the main reason this bad is generating in the society?
Oh, that's a really good question. One that I barely have been asked through all of the different interviews I've done. And I think it is something that I kind of understand. I would say that there's certain things. One of the first things is empathy and narcissism. And again, that's nuanced. Not everybody is an empath and not everybody is a narcissist. There's always, they have little bits of narcissism or they have little bits of like ability to feel empathy. Some people are completely cut off. On the extremes, they're completely cut off. And some people can't even talk without feeling love. You know, there's, you've got all the extremes, but the majority of us, again, we're all balanced in the middle. We're a little bit narcissistic in our behavior, and yet we have the ability to feel empathy and use empathy when it happens. Now, those extremes are important because the one extreme where everybody's happy all the time and life is wonderful, those people don't see what's happening most of the time. They're too busy. Everything's lovely. Everything's wonderful. On the other side, the dark place where everything's horrible, everything's nasty. Well, our society is built by these people. Those people over here, the happy ones, have zero power because they're too busy just living life, enjoying being with other people, being human, being able to connect. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that these people are bad. They're just, you know, the majority of people who are on the happy, happy, happy side have missed the fact that the society has been created by the nasty narcissists who really, it's not like even like the idea that, oh, there's a family, a famous family with a famous name and they're evil and every single member of their family is evil. In actual fact, you find that a family, a big family, will have one person who's a real narcissist, a really rich family, a real narcissist, and he or she will make the most money, usually a he, will make the most money possible. And the rest of the family will be like, we love him. We love him. We'll go and we'll hang around with him. And then that person hands down that money to their direct line. And one of those people is also the most narcissistic and doesn't care about people, only cares about making money and cares about wealth. And they thrive with all of this money and ability to do that again and so on and so forth. And I do think that there's an element genetically that some people have or some families have like a narcissistic trait that runs through their family, and it expresses genetically in a way that is convenient for our current system, which is really capitalism in general. So if you don't care about emotion, you don't care about people feeding themselves, if you don't care about people clothing themselves, if you don't care about people being able to afford rent and being able to afford every normal things, then you don't mind taking all of their money. You know, that's a fact. You just don't mind it. And money, wealth drifts upwards. So if you've got that ability and your family through time has had that ability, then all of that Pareto distribution, you know, the wealth rises to the top. It goes to the top of these areas and other people basically have nothing. So I can't quite remember what is why are people bad. Now, I think we then see these people as bad. Yeah. And then we see their families as bad. We see their brothers and sisters as bad. Listen, if my sister was really rich and was giving me like £1 million and was awful, if I didn't know any better, then I'd be completely happy with that situation because I would be able to go off in my Lamborghini and forget about the world with a bottle of champagne and go, woohoo, my sister's rich and I don't have to worry about life. So I think everybody has this like higher ideal of who they could be, and barely anybody lives up to that. So we have a higher ideal of what, how others should be. And so a lot of these, a lot of the bad is in a very small amount of people who know how to keep that money growing and don't care about taking off the people who are the most vulnerable, because they're the easiest to take from. So that's usually where the money, that's why the wealth rises to the top. It gets redistributed upwards, doesn't it? But it gets taken from the people who don't have money. So they don't have educational possibilities. They don't have the sense how to use money. And then someone comes along and says, you give me all your money and I can sort out your life for you. And they're like, oh, and that's it. That's how wealth trickles up to the top. But I think there's a genetic factor, but I think our society and cultures within our society are really unhealthy. Humanity is pretty unhealthy. It's been living on a diet of hate, fear, of all of these different things, and so we run to people who then can say they can protect us, they can sort out all our problems, and they're always the bad people. I mean, I don't know when one good person has ever said that isn't in, I mean, there's only a couple in history where you're like, oh, Muhammad and Christ were like that, weren't they? All right, if Muhammad and Christ were like that, if they were truly, you know, that thing, if yogis or other people could reach spiritual enlightenment, and, you know, and you got swamis here and swamis there who are able to touch with people, you got AC Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada walking through the gardens and giving enlightenment to his followers, you know. Yes, okay, but those are really, really, like, you know, we notice those people. The majority of people who claim to be those people are just a brand, you know. They're just a brand pushing out, and they're trying to get people's money so that they can live a happier life, so that they can bring up their children and their children won't have to fear or suffer, so that they can be right and the other people can be wrong. It's not only for all the other good things, it's also so that they can hit their ego, you know, they can boost up their own ego. I'm successful, I've got money, I've got power, that makes me happier inside. And then they get there and they're like, I'm so sad. Because, you know, life is just, there is, you know, they say money can't buy you happiness, or money can't buy you life. Maybe it can. Maybe it can. It can buy you opportunities. That's what it can buy you. And if you've got sense to use them. But the majority of human existence is made up of personal suffering that we have no control over. The loss of people around us, the loss of our own situations, the loss of our own mental health on occasion, the loss of our bodily health. These sort of losses are just everyday human experiences that leave us susceptible to bad people. So when there's susceptibility to bad people, when there's a benefit to being bad, when these people have maybe a genetic predisposition to not caring and being more narcissistic than empathic, and the dance between the two is constant, then it means that you get bad people. And some of it is really convenient. I explained that the World Economic Forum is an example of this. We see them as bad people up on the hillside in Davos. Klaus Schwab is Dr. Evil. He's twiddling his fingers as he's rubbing his cat, and he's like, I will make you all suffer. But it's not quite like that, because evil people probably don't know most of the time they're being evil. It's just a way of life for them. So it's, you know, we paint that picture because it makes us feel better, because we've seen it in movies and books, and it makes us feel more comfortable psychologically and we understand what's going on. But in reality, what makes somebody bad is usually it can be subjective, it can be of the time, it can be very much in the moment. I mean, you get your choices in life, don't you? You either choose a good path or you choose a bad path, and every single person will choose a load of bad paths, whether they like it or not. Sometimes you do not have a good path open to you. So being human's hard. Being bad runs alongside being human, as long with being good.
So from when you're doing this investigative journalism?
Oh, it's In a sense, it was from about 2000, 2001. But really, professionally, it was and properly sitting down and researching hard and writing up quality articles from about 2016. Really, I say 2000, 2001. I was working in hotels. I had a lot of really, really like. I worked nights. I liked working nights, and it meant we always delivered the newspapers. So we had a lot of time between 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the morning when everything was quiet to read through all the newspapers. So I was I used to do that just constantly. Every article as quickly as I possibly could, scan through and look for things that were interesting. And I realized I was researching. And when September the 11th happened, well, that was just like, my brain couldn't take it. So I just kept, we'd always be giving away certain newspapers in the hotel. So I'd take newspapers home and I kind of started collecting them, you know, and then it was a realization, oh, I can do that online as well, and I can go around online and look for information, and there was a load of sort of circumstances. I was in a house once where someone was growing drugs and growing marijuana, and the police raided the house. And they didn't take any of the growing equipment. They just took all of the boxes of newspapers I had. They took all my research, and it was really confusing. Things like that made me go, oh, that's really interesting. Why is information more dangerous to the authorities than the other stuff that's supposed to be illegal? Newspapers aren't illegal. That doesn't make any sense. But I started to realize that there was, you know, we are not different than our ancestors. You know, the Gestapo in Germany used to go around and check people's stuff and what they were doing, and we do the same nowadays. We just do it in a different way, and we try and make it look like we're really nice. And so it was really I started researching probably regularly about 2006, 2007, 2008, but I was too scared to say anything out loud for years, until 2015. I had like a change in my life, a change in my direction. I was like, it's time for me to be me, instead of being like hidden away from the world and high on drugs. I'd have to come off drugs, and that's what I did. I went through a path where now I don't have to take drugs to be happy. I don't have to the idea of taking pills every day is horrifying to me now. Back then it was just like, what pills can I fit in my mouth? So it's like, you know, I found that the more I asked questions and the more I became a journalist, and once I started really becoming a journalist and really answering the questions I had, the less need I had for things like drugs or alcohol or other things, gambling. I didn't need that stuff anymore. If I was finding the truth somewhere else, I didn't need to go and hide off in the lies elsewhere. And I think that's one of the things we do in life. We make a bed of lies to hide from our truth. So yeah, 2016, and then 2017 was a big year. 2019 was really important because I started researching the Jeffrey Epstein case. And then everything, I started working for Unlimited Hangout, and I started writing really professionally.
So how these stories that you have investigated, how these stories affected you personally?
Well, a lot of it is like, first of all, it affects me in a way that I'm really interested about what's coming next in the future. So I want to know that. But I get emotionally linked to certain people sometimes. So like, I wrote a series called the Black Hand series, and I wrote 5 articles. It was about London gangsters in the 50s and the 60s, and how these nightclubs girls all died within a year and a half, and all of their nightclubs got taken over by intelligence linked gangsters. And I wasn't intending to write those articles, but I became emotionally linked to Esmeralda Noelle Smith, Esmeralda Goulin, who created Esmeralda's Barn in the 1950s and was an amazing woman, inspiring. And so I fell in love with her, really. And I had to know more about her story. So I went through that, other things, other times, like with the history of Klaus Schwab and his family ancestry. Well, someone come to me and said, you've got 6 weeks, find out the answer. And I'm given the choice, you know, go find the answer. Who is his father? What did he do? Where is he from? Blah, blah, blah. I went away, and 6 weeks later, I came back with an astounding story that I didn't expect to find, about a man running a Nazi model company during World War II and being central to the nuclear bomb project, and a secret atomic bomb project the Nazis were doing, you know. You get attached to a story as soon as you find something that interests you, propels you. You're naturally propelled to interest in things. We're humans.
So studying a negative subject and being positive, how it is possible for you?
It wasn't at first. For the first few years, I spent, every time it got to about November, December, I just had to stop working for 2 months. I just had to stop. I felt so sad. It was winter. Everything's grey outside. I can't do this. I can't do journalism like this during that period. It's terrible. But I got over that, mainly by when I write an article, I say, like, I'm emotionally attached to Esmeralda in those articles, but the rest of it, I learned to detach myself from. So most of the time, I'm just emotionally going through the information, just emotionally detached, going through the information and forming it all together. It usually takes 2 days before, like when I'm researching, it takes about 2 days to stop me feeling like really strong emotion about a subject, so I can really start researching without getting distracted by emotion. So I have to control it, and I have to think about it. And sometimes I have to cry. As humans, sometimes you have to cry. And I honestly, when I talk about Esmeralda, I cried about Esmeralda maybe in the past few years now, 20 times. I felt so connected to her on occasions. Just like I felt so sorry for her. And I felt so sorry that she didn't get to live her life. And she died in a gas-filled room and all of that, you know. And I feel it bubbling up now. And every now and again, I think about her as a human, not as a story, not as an article, as a human. And I just have, like, I just well up with tears. Because, you know, human beings, we are so... The only reason we don't love all of the people in the past like we love people today is because we're not living in the past. You know, if we had the choice to look throughout history, we wouldn't be looking for the bad people, the nasty people. We'd be looking for the lovely people.
So you're doing this from a long time. And what is your podcast is about? And what is it?
Yeah, NewsPaste podcast. So NewsPaste is my website, newspaste.com. And the NewsPaste podcast basically talks to people who are either publishing articles or stories about events that the mainstream media don't like to cover. So like the assassination of John Lennon or the assassination of JFK. You know, I talked to Corey Hughes about JFK. As a researcher, he's spicy, naughty. They wouldn't like him on the mainstream media. But I can get really into talking about a subject through a different perspective, from a different focus. I also try and make sure that I talk to everybody who can tell their story in some way that will help other people understand their own story. So that is hard to explain, but once I kind of find someone who I like to talk to on I'd like to talk to on my podcast, I get them on, ask them the questions that I think people want to know, and that's like how to get through life by understanding someone else's journey. So that's really what it's about.
So reading different people's story, how that feels?
What do you mean? Just by like
knowing the extreme mindset people's stories, how that feels?
Yeah. Well, it's a bit strange, isn't it? When you work out what I think you have to really see humans as they are. They're really often they're very kind people, but they're confused, they get angry, and they get into a bad place. And some people just can't get out of a bad place. Some people, they're bad forever, you know. They're going to be like that. Once you know what somebody's like and how they're going to act, you start to see it all around you in different ways, in ways that you don't really like understand until you've seen like other people's stories. You don't understand how it you know, how it works in your own life. So I find that a lot of what I do gets me is self-reflect. I can look at myself and I can say, well, certain aspects of that negative behavior I've exhibited in the past or exhibit in my life, and so it helps me on my personal journey, but it helps me just navigate life as well, you know, as a human, as an individual.
So new space, it concentrates only on United States or other countries on the planet?
No, I try and go around. I try and make sure I try and it covers anything that I find interesting. A course is going to be a lot in the English speaking world, but I do try and make sure that I can. So my last podcast was with the Nation of Israel guys, who are really, really intriguing, and of course it's a really prescient time to talk to people like that. So I try and talk to anybody that's interesting, but it does seem to be that there's a lot of Americans who are active. So it's you know, that's the one reason why it ends up that you talk to a lot of people in either America or the UK. There's a lot of people willing to talk out there, you know.
You want to change anything with new space in the world?
No, I think what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get other people to publish their work on it. That will, not all of their work, just like good excerpt, so that people, it can lead people to other people's sites. But really, I need help with that, and that's quite hard to do, quite hard to find people to help you to build a project like this. But I've got all of the time in the world, hopefully, so who knows. That's the thing, I gotta be like, it's hard to find that, but I'm gonna find it. So I gotta take away the limit out of my conversations nowadays, and I gotta stop being, you know, negative about anything. I want to find people who are going to be able to help me get information out to make people calmer, happier, make better decisions.
So at last, what do you say about new space and about yourself to my audience for watching and listening to you from anywhere on this planet?
Okay, well, if you come over to newspace.com, what you will find will be silly. It will be a few shows, a silly news pasty, Newshound, which is really fun, going through the newspaper archives, the Newspace podcast, of course. I also have a news theory, which looks at conspiracy theories as the mainstream media looks at it. And, you know, there's a lot of other articles and information there that people will find interesting. But also there's a lot of truth to be had. You know, in amongst me being silly and in amongst me showing you how the research done, I will also be introducing you to a world that you probably aren't allowed to look at. That's important.
Great. What do you say about my work, Johnny? What you have seen my work, and what do you say about it?
Well, you are so positive and happy. Look at you. I mean, the thing is when you're talking to a lot of people, they're like so serious. They it's a straight face, but you've got like positivity and happiness glowing off you, you know? And I think the way you speak with people is really kind. Your energy comes off. And I really like it. I appreciate it. It bounces with me as well. I love to see a happy face. And I think that if you start off with a smile and end with a smile, you will get to a better place wherever you are, whoever you are, whatever you're doing.
That's great. And I did master's in software engineering, also bachelor's in computer science and engineering. Right now I'm doing some DevOps engineering, like software development projects. That is my full-time job. Apart from that, I'm talking with experts like you who are into different industries and who are into different mm-hmm. parts of the world, who are solving different kinds of problems and who are being very specific about particular subjects. Me talking with people like you around the world, what I'm going to learn and how I'm going to use this knowledge in my career.
Yeah. Well, I think that's you know, you've got, you will pick up how to tell the truth from a lie. If you're looking within the world of news, if you're looking for the world of research, and if you're looking in my world, what I'm trying to teach people is how to see logical fallacies. And that then you can take that and you can implement it in all ways with all of the people you work with and all of the people you talk with. You can see if their argument is worth it, if their own programming makes sense, you could say.
So can I put this video on my YouTube channel with your permission?
Yeah, of course, of course, of course. Anywhere you want to put it, I'm fine, yeah.
And also on my podcast, website, internet, social media, everywhere with your permission.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'll share your work on my website as well. People who find our, conversation anywhere in the internet can able to see the work that you're doing and can see the contribution that you're doing to the world.
Excellent. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you talking and being so nice. I like a nice person. It makes me happy.
It's an honor, sir. Thank you. Keep going and keep doing a lot of work and make people smile and do some change with your work.
I will. I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.